And W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Wendy Gillette in New York. Police are searching for a gunman after a mass shooting late last night in Monterey Park, California, near Los Angeles. 10 people were killed and 10 hurt.
Officials here are still trying to figure out what triggered a man to open fire last night during a festive Lunar New Year's celebration. Andrew Meyer is with the LA County Sheriff's Department.
That's too early in the investigation to know what the motive is.
The gunman came into a ballroom and suddenly opened fire. This man lives nearby.
Just people just trying to celebrate a Lunar New Year's. Yeah, this is devastating.
This city with a large Asian population attracts people during the Lunar New Year's celebrations. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Monterey Park, California.
The Justice Department has taken six more documents after searching President Biden's home, according to a statement from his attorney. CBS's Christian Benavides reports.
Saturday's statement says DOJ had full access to the president's home, including personally handwritten notes, files, papers, binders, memorabilia, to-do lists, schedules, and reminders going back decades.
More than 100,000 protesters demonstrated this weekend against Israel's new far-right government. CBS's Haley Ott is in Jerusalem.
Israelis have been taking to the streets in their thousands to protest the country's new far-right, ultra-religious government. Some said they were fighting for their futures.
We care about our rights, like women's rights and Palestinian people's rights, homosexuality, everything.
The family of a man who died after he was repeatedly shocked by an LAPD taser has filed a $50 million lawsuit against the city of Los Angeles. CBS's Danya Backus has more.
Say his name.
A call for answers and accountability.
Please help me.
31-year-old Keenan Anderson died January 3rd, hours after a struggle with Los Angeles police.
They tried to kill me.
He was tased six times in less than a minute.
Last year's baby formula shortage has led to a federal investigation against a Michigan company. CBS News correspondent Stacy Lynn reports.
The DOJ is conducting a criminal investigation into Abbott Laboratories. It temporarily halted production at the Sturgis factory last February and recalled baby formula made at the plant. This contributed to an infant formula shortage that sent parents and federal officials scrambling for months. When the FDA inspected the facility, they found potentially deadly bacteria, among other problems.
This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The long-term effects of Wisconsin's redistricting process were apparent in the November elections. A nonpartisan good government group says voters who feel overlooked should not give up. Mike Moen reports.
Democratic Governor Tony Evers won re-election, but Republicans maintained strong control over the legislature. Jay Heck of the group Common Cause points out that Evers maintains his veto power, but he says Republicans still carry a lot of weight, partly because they keep redrawing the maps to their advantage.
There were more votes cast for Democratic candidates statewide than Republican, but the contrast with the legislative elections in the state is so sharp, it almost makes laughable the idea that we have a true representative democracy.
Researchers have said that over the past decade, Wisconsin has produced among the most gerrymandered voting district maps in the country. Heck says voters should look ahead to next year's state Supreme Court election with the hope a less politicized court could eventually revisit the issue. And there could be legislation floated again next year to develop an independent redistricting process. In the meantime, he says the current maps allow a smaller percentage of voters to decide who controls the legislature, leaving other voters behind in fair representation.
Urban areas in Wisconsin have suffered a decline in the shared revenue from the state, even though those people pay taxes.
Heck says that means less support for schools, roads, and other public needs. Analysts say lawmakers representing these areas get packed into boundaries that ultimately diminish their voices at the state capitol. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does a $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
And this is Jim Santel. This is our weekend review of the important, the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. We have in this second hour of our time together this Saturday morning, January 21st, still a very ambitious agenda, many issues, many topics to get to during the course of the next hour, and always, always appreciate your phone calls, your comments, your questions. We're going to take a couple of those in just a moment or so from two of our terrific callers here. Before we get to that, let me go back to yet another major issue, another major event that happened this past week. It has to do with a lawsuit brought by the former President Donald Trump in the Federal District Court in Florida. You may recall, because we talked about this in a previous broadcast, that Donald Trump had filed previously this omnibus wide-sweeping lawsuit naming Hillary Clinton, the Democratic Committee, and other people and entities that he claimed had conspired to damage him in the 2016 election with what he called false claims about his ties to Russia. Many other allegations there as well. Among the defendants in this lawsuit were James Comey, the former director of the FBI, the former deputy director, a fellow named Andrew McCabe, whose name you may recall as well. He was the one who opened the counterintelligence investigation into Donald Trump's ties to Russia. And also former British intelligence agent Christopher Steele, who'd assembled this dossier of some lurid claims about Donald Trump and Russia, many of which were unsubstantiated, some of which turned out to be true, others not true. An omnibus sweeping lawsuit. Well, what happened? You may recall that several weeks ago, the Florida district judge, his name is Donald Middlebrooks, had dismissed this case on the basis it was completely frivolous. There are nothing to pursue here at all, but promised as well that he'd revisit whether or not sanctions should be issued with respect to the parties and the lawyers for bringing this completely unfounded, unfactually based lawsuit in the first place. And sure enough, this past week, in a scathing ruling, a U.S. District Judge Donald Middlebrooks ordered that Donald Trump and one of his lawyers together pay nearly $1 million, in particular $937,989.39, almost $1 million for sanctions for bringing this frivolous lawsuit against nearly three dozen of Donald Trump's perceived political enemies. And the ruling is significant not only because it sends this message, once again, deterring future claims like this, as we have spoken about in so many instances, but also because of the significance of the rebuke of Donald Trump, who is finally, in many of these circumstances, both civil and criminal, facing some consequences for his long history of using the courts as a weapon against his business rivals and partners, his former employees, reporters, and also political rivals as well. What did the judge say
Very significant to read about this. This case should never have been brought. That's how this order begins. 46-page ruling, he goes on to say, its inadequacy as a legal claim was evident from the start. No reasonable lawyer would have filed it. Intended for a political purpose, none of the counts of the amended complaint state a cognizable, meaning something we can adjudicate, we can resolve, legal claim as well. Judge goes on to say that Mr. Trump is a prolific and sophisticated litigant who is repeatedly using the courts to seek revenge on political adversaries. He is the mastermind of strategic abuse of the judicial process, and he cannot be seen as a litigant blindly following the advice of a lawyer. He knew full well the impact of his actions. Says that the lawsuit was brought in bad faith for an improper purpose, needlessly harmed the 31 individuals and organizations, including some political folks he had sued, in order to dishonestly advance a political narrative. Now, the reason why the lawsuit, again, significant for what it did, and not only bringing this to a conclusion, but also ordering that Donald Trump and his lawyer, a woman named Alina Habba, whose name and image you may have also seen in the media, very significant, but also because of the deterrent impact. Because what does Donald Trump do on the very same day that he gets his scathing ruling from Judge Middlebrooks? He dismisses another lawsuit. This significant rebuke prompts Donald Trump to do something immediately. Donald Trump had filed another lawsuit against Letitia James for the work that she is doing in a piece of civil litigation. We've talked about this a lot in New York, seeking $250 million from him based upon some financial interests there, valuations of property there. Donald Trump had turned around and sued her as well, alleging the same kind of thing. And interestingly, that lawsuit also in South Florida was also assigned to Judge Donald Middlebrooks, the same judge who just yesterday and the day before issued this scathing ruling, putting an end to this other lawsuit and fining Donald Trump and his lawyer about $1 million. What does Donald Trump do on the same day that he gets that bad opinion? He dismisses in a very, very terse notice on Friday, just yesterday, he's voluntarily dropping that lawsuit he had filed against Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York, and again, sending this message that when indeed judges respond not only dramatically but appropriately to this kind of frivolous action, even Donald Trump will back off, and it has its impact, its deterrent impact. That, of course, in addition to the many other pieces of civil and, yes, criminal litigation that continue to dog appropriately our former president. Again, that big news, in the headlines just this past week. Before we talk about more stories, let's take some callers. First, Catherine from Madison. You've been waiting on the line for a while. Catherine, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Sure. Thank you, James. I have a question for you that's been bothering me. It refers to that Supreme Court justice on abortion, Supreme Court justice ruling on abortion.
Yes, Dobbs.
And
right?
It seemed that, the Dobbs ruling, right. It seemed like it came out of nowhere. I mean, they said that the Supreme Court was going to take this up, but I never heard any discussion of the actual hearing, like, you know, what arguments were made or, you know, who voted which way or anything like that. And I'm wondering why I pay attention to the news. Why did I miss all of the actual hearing that they had?
All right.
And I'll take the answer off the phone. I just was wondering where that went.
Sure, Catherine, I so appreciate the comment. You're not alone. You are not alone in America. It's one of the reasons why I'm so very honored and pleased not only to have you but others call in, and also this opportunity to talk with you about the process, how this happens. Many of the things that we've been talking about in the past several months, not only the decisions that have been made, but also the process, how the Supreme Court gets there. And the very focused answer to your question, which is also a great civics lesson for all of us, is that the Supreme Court, again, makes decisions about which cases it will choose and which ones it won't. And long before Dobbs was decided in June of last year, there were cases, obviously, this one percolating up through the district court, through the appellate court, making determinations about whether or not the ruling in Roe versus Wade should remain. It was an attack plainly upon Roe versus Wade that makes its way up. The Supreme Court decides in the prior term to take this case on. They issue what's called a writ of certiorari, which is the same thing it's doing in all these other cases, the 52 cases that I mentioned early on and the kinds of cases we're going to continue to talk about in future broadcasts. So they say, you know what, we're going to take this case. And again, sending the message not only to the litigants, but to America, that we are going to revisit. We're going to revisit this whole issue. So there was notice out there. Supreme Court is going to do this again. This has been a years-long, decades-long, ever since 1973, effort not only to try to curtail Roe versus Wade, but also to overturn it completely. And again, over the years, the Supreme Court has, for the most part, upheld Roe versus Wade, upheld a pushback. And upheld folks who have said, you know what, you can't limit that right, can't impose undue burdens. Supreme Court has been very, very resolute and very clear on those issues for about 50 years or so. Finally, sending the message that's going to take this up. And to answer your question very directly, Catherine, on December, I think it was December 1 of 2021, so well over a year ago, the Supreme Court did, in fact, hear oral argument, days of oral argument, on the merits of Dobbs. And those opinions, those oral arguments, in anticipation of the opinions, were, in fact, a broadcast because it was in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic when the Supreme Court was not open to the public. And they continue, that's the reason I appreciate the call so much, Catherine, they continue to be the subject of public display and public broadcast. Chief Justice of the Supreme Court has said he's now going to reopen the Supreme Court itself so people can come in and actually watch those oral arguments. Previously, they were just on Zoom. Now they're opening up again. And again, with respect to Dobbs, this was the subject of oral argument. And in December of 2021, based upon those days, those hours of oral argument, both in favor and in opposition to overturning Roe versus Wade, heated argument about whether or not that should happen. The lawyers being questioned by the justices, which what they do during the course of oral argument, and an awful lot of indication way back in December of 2021, based upon the nature and the content of the comments made, the questions offered by the Supreme Court justices, that Roe versus Wade probably would at least be curtailed, if not rolled back completely. So we did have some notice about it. But to your very good point, Catherine, this is exactly the reason why on this broadcast and plainly others around the country calling to the attention of all of us the fact that these cases are being argued. And if you are concerned about them, instead of waiting until the decision is rendered and then identifying a protest, pursuing a protest, identifying some means of responding, this is the time. This is the time to advocate publicly for your positions on all of these issues. And again, in the future, even on privacy rights issues, as those come up, being in front of the United States Supreme Court. So appreciate the comment and the request for procedural information, which did, in fact, predate Dobbs and predates all the decisions before the Supreme Court. Joe from Madison, you're also calling in this morning. Joe, thanks once again for calling in and being a faithful listener and an always bright and thoughtful commentator.
Well, I hope this put this in a direction of learning some more. I do not understand this, and I'm hoping you can provide some illumination for me. I'm speaking of a situation that happened that was drawn attention to in the last week, which was the activities or the bragging by Robert Spindell, who, just background for people, is the chairperson of the Republican Party's 4th Congressional District, which includes much of Milwaukee County and almost all of the city of Milwaukee. And he sent an email to other Republicans kind of hailing the party's success in suppressing the vote in Milwaukee. My question to you is, he speaks about reduction happening overwhelmingly in Black and Hispanic areas. How can people who are Black or Hispanic seek to find redress for this?
And Mr. Joe, I'm going to have you stay on the line so we can talk about that. It's a very important point. Let's talk about the impact upon voting in the state of Wisconsin. Stay with me, Joe. Stay with me, everybody, as we talk more about voting in the state of Wisconsin and these comments made just this past week.
It makes me smile, and you have a piano, but if you can play the Peanuts theme song.
Oh my gosh.
You know he can.
Yes.
On the Devil's Radio.
Yes! Saturday night, 6 p.m. to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues. From the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. And we are now on the air in Waukesha. Live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. Chance for scattered snow showers this afternoon. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Daytime highs approaching 30. Winds out of the north, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 20 tonight. Cloudy skies expected. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 33. A dusting of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 23 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
We are back, and we're talking to Joe from Madison. And Joe, right before the break, you were bringing to all of our attention this very troubling story, reliable story in the news about these comments, these written remarks made by Robert Spindell, gloating, if you will, proud of the fact that we had voter suppression. And right before the break, as we were chatting, I didn't give you a full chance to express your concerns about this, and perhaps even raise a question about it. So, Joe, go ahead and tell us more about your view about what Robert Spindell said, and I'll also, I expect, comment about that, too.
Thanks for the opportunity, Jim. I really appreciate it. I mean, the exact verbiage that Mr. Spindell used, and again, he's not just an individual speaking. He is the head of the Republican Party in the 4th Congressional District, which is the area where the city of Milwaukee is. So he's speaking in his role, not as an individual, so freedom of speech, but as a person who is speaking about an organization, that being the Republican Party.
Right.
And the language used is, it says specifically, we can be proud of the city of Milwaukee casting 37,000 less votes than cast in the 2018 election, with major reduction happening in overwhelmingly Black and Hispanic areas. And then to conclude, he brags about this as, quote, a well thought out multifaceted plan. My question is, let's insert another bit of language. Let's say we had the head of the Republican 4th Congressional District bragging about we have a major reduction happening in overwhelmingly Jewish areas. Is that okay? I mean, I don't think so. And I think the fact that we're not talking about reducing the vote in, you know, people who like to play golf, we're talking about specific racial groups. So my question is, I don't understand why there is not some redress for people, African-American and Hispanic people of the city of Milwaukee to seek some kind of redress. How would they go about that? Or is this just can't happen and one just has to suck it up and say, oh, well, so what if they try to specifically limit, suppress the voting of particular racial groups? I mean, I'm just astounded in this day and age that a person can get away with that statement and there seems to be no consequence. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Jim. Thanks a lot.
Right, Joe, it's always a very important call. And again, coming out of Wisconsin news just this past week, I share your outrage. I suspect everyone on all sides of the political aisle should be outraged by these kinds of comments, because it is gloating. It is being celebratory about the notion that we are keeping people, anyone, from voting, especially invidious because, as you just indicated, Joe, focusing upon people of color, right? And as you indicated, could very easily substitute any other kind of immutable characteristic, sexual orientation, gender identity, ability, disability, faith issues, as you said, using the example of someone who is Jewish, someone who is sick,
someone who is a Hindu, a Buddhist, whatever their religious faith may be, all kinds of mutable characteristics, national origin, all those kinds of things that we prohibit in America and many, many laws, including employment laws and housing, all sorts of things out there that prohibit that kind of behavior. Now, this kind of conduct, this kind of public statement, first and foremost, like we are doing right now and others as well, should be roundly and soundly condemned by everyone, looking forward to everyone on all sides of the political aisle, not just the Democrats who have done this already, condemning this sort of thing. Note that Mr. Spindell, who is a Wisconsin elections commissioner as well, also serves in that particular important role. And so the question is, as Joe, you're just saying, is what kinds of remedies are out there? First of all, of course, the public domain, right? This notion that when you say this kind of thing, not only are you revealing something about yourself, but you're representing, as you said, a political party, and you're also serving on the Elections Commission. And an awful lot of people have called upon him to resign from that position. Now, undeniably, there are partisan political people assigned to that, but balanced on that commission because we want to do what? What is the purpose of that commission? To ensure voting. And so if you are a part of that commission and you are, in fact, not even committed to the fundamental notion, you need to leave. You need to resign. And you need to let somebody else, regardless of their political party or their persuasion, to do that work, again, sometimes in contest with, sometimes having good, honest, rational discussions with the other side, but doing that not based upon the notion that we are happy about. We are gleeful that there is a particular portion of our population that indeed is being suppressed when it comes to voting. And that leads me to the second observation that I have about this. And again, Joe, so much appreciate your calling in. We talk a lot about the future. We talk a lot about other opportunities that may be out there to attack not only voting lines that were put in place, again, by our state Supreme Court that we have followed now for the 2020 election. We'll be following again in coming years. There are additional chances down the road to address that as well. And in that connection, these kinds of statements out there that go to the animus, the purpose, the reason for drawing the lines as they are, when it comes, as we know well, to racial gerrymandering, the Supreme Court has said, yes, we're still going to address those kinds of things. There's a case called Merrill versus Mulligan. It's pending before the Supreme Court right now on an issue coming out of the South on racial gerrymandering, in particular in Alabama, on whether or not you can discriminate against people of color based upon the lines that you're drawing. So the federal courts and the state courts as well can address this. In the context of those kinds of additional challenges to lines drawn around the country, including right here in Wisconsin, these kinds of statements can in fact be used to support the notion that there is racial animus, there is racial discrimination going on. And so we'd like to think that these statements are not simply offensive, but they can in fact result in changes to the Wisconsin Election Commission. It's up to the Republicans to determine whether or not this is someone who should continue in their leadership, but could also be used as evidence of an intent to discriminate. And that's what the Voting Rights Act from the 1960s is all about, the notion that we permit everyone to vote. We permit everyone to come forward and be a part of America. Thanks so much for the call, Joe. Talking more about all these kinds of issues before America as we continue here on Morning Cannolis.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Special Report.
I know a lot of people in this neighborhood. This is right in our backyard. It's devastating.
He's talking about a shooting during a Lunar New Year celebration in a ballroom in Monterey Park, California. 10 people have been killed, at least 10 others injured. KCBS reporter Lauren Posen is at the scene where police briefed the media.
Perhaps the most disturbing news out of that briefing was that the suspect is still on the run. We don't know anything about the suspect. No description. Male. That's all we know right now. That's all police, the detectives are willing to say.
Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department Captain Andrew Meyer says police also responded to calls about a separate shooting nearby.
We're aware of an incident that occurred in Alhambra, and we have investigators on scene trying to determine if there's a connection between these two incidents.
It is not yet known if that ballroom shooting incident can be described as a hate crime. CBS News Special Report. I'm Linda Kenyon.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
The Devil's Advocates.
But do you think the Biden administration's called up Laura Ingraham and making the announcement to the world that we're invading Russia with amphibious troops? Come on, Trump. I mean, and I want to hear fine Trumpsters that want to defend that crap. You know, he's a little late for the early bird buffet. Maybe you people were just naive marks who believed he was a super genius.
Then I got some land I'd like to sell you outside of Fukushima.
Check out the entire podcast library at darnwi.com.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lierley helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
They were going to show a video of Roger Stone recorded by Danish filmmakers.
Just Google Roger Stone Monopoly Man.
You remember the old Batman TV series? He looks like the Penguin.
It's like a bad costume for A Christmas Carol.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And I know that firsthand because I was in that every year as a kid. Always a street urchin, never a cratchit.
That needs to be the title of your autobiography. Always a street urchin, never a cratchit.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingraham Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 AM 101 FM, The Shaw.
And we are back. We're talking about major issues in law, government, and justice in America. Right before the break, we were talking with Jo about her identification of this very troubling story in Wisconsin. Robert Spindell making these comments, serving not only in a leadership position inside the Republican Party, but arguably even more significantly, serving still on the Wisconsin Election Commission, designed purposefully out there to try to improve the mechanisms through which all members of the residents of the state of Wisconsin can have access to the polls, and indicating this past week, revealing notes made, comments made about happiness that the voters in Milwaukee, black and Hispanic voters in particular, that their voting rates were suppressed and that that is a good thing. And again, as Joe indicated, an awful lot of reason to be concerned, not only because of those statements in the public domain, not only because of
his positions in our community, but also because of the future. And if that is indeed the approach being taken, that we're looking to suppress votes, that is plainly contrary not only to the Voting Rights Act and certainly our state principles, but also who we are as America. So we look forward to condemnation roundly and perhaps some action with respect to Mr. Spindell as well as we go forward. That story also leads into the next one that is beyond the state of Wisconsin, having to do with New Mexico and something that developed this past week. We know for some time that there has been some election, or rather some successful candidates for a public position in New Mexico who've been the subject of not just harassment, but shooting at their homes. Well, this past week, authorities in Albuquerque, basically on Monday, revealed that a former Republican candidate who had lost his bid for a state House seat, again, this is a state House seat, in November of last year, was arrested in connection with these shootings, these recent shootings at the homes of four Democratic elected officials. People had been successful. His name is Solomon Pena. Solomon Pena, much in the news this past week. The chief of the Albuquerque Police Department said that Pena was the mastermind behind a conspiracy in which four other men were also paid by Pena to shoot at these homes of these two county commissioners and two state legislatures. Believe it or not, the police indicated further that part of their investigation, and that led to the arrest of Pena, that Pena had paid four men cash, sent text messages with addresses where he wanted them to shoot at the homes. He accompanied these men, actually, to the house of State Senator Linda Lopez on January 3rd, right after the first of the year, and attempted to shoot. But apparently, according to the reports coming out of the police, the automatic rifle he was using malfunctioned. Another man shot more than a dozen rounds from a handgun, including into the bedroom of Ms. Lopez's daughter. Just horrific behavior. Again, the subject not only of an investigation leading to the arrest of Solomon Pena and others for the involvement in these shots fired into and at the homes of Democratic elected officials there. Significantly, the backstory on this, there was another spokesman for the police department who said that had Mr. Pena had visited three of the county commissioners, including Ms. Lopez, at their homes in November after he lost the election. He had complaints about the election, apparently. He said he felt it was rigged. He approached all these commissioners and the senator at their home with paperwork claiming that they were the products, their elections were the products of fraud involving these elections. The media, again, appropriately identifying this not only for the horrific event that it is, the fact that Mr. Pena and his co-conspirators will be facing state justice in the state of New York for doing this kind of violent behavior, but also noting something beyond that. I wanted to underscore this beyond just the horror of this particular story breaking. The reality is that Mr. Pena's arrest, as we know well, comes at a time of recent increase in threats and attacks against elected officials from both parties. And this is yet another illustration of the danger that elected officials in the United States are facing as violent political speech, frankly, the sort of some that we talked about already this morning. Speech can have an impact. Words have meaning, and they have an impact. Violent political speech that suggests that there is an other out there. There are people who are not only with us, are not with us, and they are therefore subject to attacks of these kinds. All of these kinds of things increasingly crossing the line into in-person confrontation. The speech is horrific. That is to be condemned. The violence that sometimes flows from that also be condemned. Of course, the most significant indication of that, the speech on the Ellipse on January 6th, speech before that that prompted people to come to January 6th and engage in the violence that we have talked about in great detail. We know that because of a speech like that last year, an armed man who had repeatedly showed up outside the home of Seattle, a representative, Pramila Jayapal, was charged with stalking, okay? A visitor smashed a storm window at Senator Susan Collins' home in Bangor, Maine, okay? A senior senator from Bangor. An intruder broke into the San Francisco home Representative and at that time Speaker of the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, recall this well, attacked her husband, Paul Pelosi, with a hammer. He is still recovering from that. All of these are part of a trend that should be of great concern to every American as violence continues to animate people and continuing to send the message that this kind of response to disagreement in the political arena can and should be met with violence, just the opposite. That is not what we do here in America. You will, in fact, as a more of our deterrent impact, our deterrent focus, you will, in fact, be targeted for investigation. You'll be brought to justice, and hopefully Mr. Pena and others will be convicted and sentenced for this behavior, and it will have the deterrent impact upon other Solomon Penas out there who would do these kinds of things in America. It is a very troubling trend. The January 6th committee also notes this in its report with respect specifically to January 6th, but its impact upon our nation. The speech that is violative of fundamental engagements, we can disagree. Reasonable people can, in fact, do disagree. That's what America is all about. That's what free speech is all about. It does not cross and will not and should not cross the line of incitement to violence, especially this kind of violence attempting to attack specific individuals. Some other news this past week I'm going to talk about as well, also in the violent crime area. I mentioned this at the start of our first hour, some very disturbing news from the past. We recall well back in 2019, August 3rd of 2019, a fellow named Patrick Wood Crucius, C-R-U-S-I-S, he was charged at the time with 23 counts of a hate crime. Why? Because he had used a firearm to commit murder in a crime of violence. Where did that take place? You recall this well, the El Paso Walmart gun shooting of August 3rd of 2019. Crucius subsequently charged with 23 counts, as I said, of hate crimes, resulting in death. 23 counts of use of a firearm to commit murder and a crime of violence, 22 counts of hate crime and attempt to kill, 22 counts of use of a firearm during a crime of violence, with the death penalty being the subject of some focus. This past week, the Attorney General of the United States of America, again, this case pending in the federal court there in Texas against Mr. Crucius for this hate crime violence that resulted in this horrific Walmart shooting back in August of 2019, an awful lot of question about whether or not the United States Department of Justice would seek the death penalty for the horror, the terror that he visited upon the community, upon that El Paso community, upon the Walmart, and frankly, upon all of us in America. This past week, the Attorney General of the United States of America, Merrick Garland, as is his prerogative, issued a statement, a very brief statement, as attorneys general and all administrations do in these kinds of cases, indicating that the federal government will not be seeking the death penalty for this man who, again, accused of the massacre of these 23 people in El Paso at that Walmart in 2019. Significantly, the Justice Department has not sought the death penalty in a new case since Attorney General Merrick Garland took office in 2021. Merrick Garland and President Joe Biden have spoken both in opposition to the federal death penalty, and the Attorney General has imposed a moratorium on the imposition federally of the death penalty pending a review of policies and procedures. And again, I raise this story not only because it's significant with respect to violent crime in America. This one, again, the result of firearms being used, the product of hate, identifying people who are the other, and opining, concluding that it is somehow okay in some universe to attack individuals, to kill people for who they are in America. Merrick Garland, again, advancing this prosecution through the U.S. Attorney's Office in Texas, making the decision, consistent with his tradition since he has been Attorney General, not to seek the death penalty. Undeniably, under the sentencing guidelines, the prosecutors here will still seek a life imprisonment for this man charged with these violations of the law, of the federal law. The trial on those federal charges scheduled for January of 2024. He's also facing 23 capital murder charges in state court. And significantly, again, the civics point behind this, in that forum, he could, in fact, face the death penalty because in Texas, of course, under state law, the death penalty is available. And so Mr. Crucius also facing those charges that presumably will follow the prosecution, the trial in federal court in January of 2024. Again, a significant development in that Walmart El Paso hate crimes shooting of August of 2019. And then I want to chat about another case that we have not talked about at all here on this broadcast, but a lot of information coming out of Fulton County. And recall well that our discussions of Fulton County in the past have focused upon a prosecutor named Fannie Willis. She is the state's attorney, the district attorney, if you will, there. And she has been conducting, through a special grand jury, an investigation as to whether or not the former president, Donald Trump, and some of his colleagues, his aides, his staff assistants, violated state law in attempting to subvert the Georgia election in 2020. This now infamous tape of the former president talking to the Secretary of State, asking him to find 11,780 votes, one more than what we need, the president said, to acquire the electoral votes in Georgia. She is conducting that investigation. She is back in the news this past week on another significant case. Again, we haven't chatted about this one before, but it is significant. And what is this case all about? Well, there's a 65-count indictment. It charges 28 people coming out of Fannie Willis's office with crimes of murder, attempted murder, armed robbery, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, theft, drug dealing, carjacking, racketeering, witness intimidation. In the indictment labels is specifically an individual named Young Thug. Young Thug is the principal defendant. His actual name is Jeffrey Williams. He is the most well-known among all of these defendants, charged also in a RICO case. That's the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. Young Thug, he is known as that in the public view, if you will. He's a rapper. But according to the allegations in the case, now in trial in Fulton County, he's also a gang leader. And according to the charges being brought by Fannie Willis, being prosecuted now in that trial, a Young Thug, Jeffrey Williams, is not only a creative artist, if you will, doing what he does in that forum, but also a violent criminal. As I said, the 65-count indictment charging him and many others with all of these horrific criminal street gang activities. Three counts also of violating the Georgia Controlled Substances Act, possession of a firearm while committing a felony, possession of a machine gun. The defense team, of course, and as we know, everyone is presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law, and that's what's going on right now. This past week, a couple of interesting stories coming out of that trial, which is going to take weeks, if not months, before we get a verdict from the jury that has been assembled there. A couple of interesting stories coming out of this horrific prosecution, and we're going to be chatting more about those in our final moments here on Morning Cannolis, talking about the importance of jury service, and then also talking about something that happened inside the courtroom itself. Stay with us for all of that.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Mondays, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
It's 4 a.m. and you're sucking baby snot through a tube because she's congested. If you love her that much, love her enough to make sure she's buckled in the right car seat. Find out more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I grew up hearing that women are bad with money, but I pay bills and take care of my family, so I'm pretty good with money. And now I'm taking control of my financial future by saving for retirement. Jumpstart your retirement savings at wesaysaveit.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Chance for scattered snow showers this afternoon. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Daytime highs approaching 30. Winds out of the north, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 20 tonight. Cloudy skies expected. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 33. A dusting of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 23 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Was talking about this case, this prosecution, this state prosecution in Fulton County, which is basically Atlanta, of a person named Young Thug. His real name is Jeffrey Williams. He's this rap superstar out there. And he is on trial for RICO-related offenses, violent crimes of various natures, very serious prosecution going on in Georgia right now. Two things happened just this past week related to the process of going forward with the trial, one in connection with jury selection, the other with respect to the behavior of the principal defendant, Mr. Williams, and one of his co-defendants. Listen to this. During the course of jury selection, continuing as a result of the beginning of this case, it's being presided over by a judge named Ural Glanville. Ural Glanville is the judge's name. During the course of this jury selection, In a motion filed just on Thursday, the prosecution alleges that during the course of this jury selection, another defendant, his name is Khalif Adams, stood up from his chair in the courtroom, inside the courtroom before the judge, walked unattended to where Jeffrey Lamar, Young Thug, was seated at counsel table next to his attorney. And Adams, the other defendant, approached Williams, extended a closed right hand toward Williams, and Williams extended his open right hand toward Adams, closed his right hand, and accepted an item of contraband. This is inside the courtroom, and that contraband is Percocet. Williams, a young thug, held the pill under the table, kept it hidden while his attorney sat next to him, relinquished it when the court of sheriffs told him to, according to this motion. Engaging in drug trafficking in the courtroom during the course of jury selection in a courtroom of the United States of America. Plainly, not only misconduct of a judicial nature there right before the judge, but presumably could be the subject of some future attention by the prosecutor happening inside the courtroom itself. So very serious matter once again. Only slightly less serious, and here's the civic lesson of the other issues coming out of this Young Thug trial in Georgia. Jury selection going on right now. Juror number 64, prospective juror number 64, appeared before this judge, Ural Glanville, on Thursday morning. She was a part of the veneer, the group that was being reviewed to determine whether or not they would be seated as jurors. She traveled to the Dominican Republic on business instead of returning to Fulton County Court. And Judge Glanville's proceedings. The woman, the prospective juror, explained that she attempted to inform jury services about her plans, emailed a copy of her travel itinerary, and the judge did not care for that. Again, failed to appear pursuant to the summons sent to her that requires prospective jurors to participate in this process. She said, "I don't really know what I was in violation of until the sheriff showed up. I thought I was following the directions." Well, the judge had a different view of this. And although the judge could, in fact, did impose a contempt citation for failure to appear for this mandatory jury service, creates a sentence up to 20 days in jail, a fine of up to $1,000. In lieu of jail time, Judge Glanville ordered the woman to write a 30-page essay on the importance of jury service, rule of law type issues. He said years ago, people that looked like us, and both the judge and the prospective jurors are African-American, people who look like us couldn't serve on juries, Glanville said. It was prohibited. He outlined the guidelines for the essay. It has to be a written in APA style, 10 primary sources, 10 secondary sources, run through a plagiarism check to make certain that it's legitimate, and due in 3 weeks. She can purge herself of the contempt if indeed she provides this report, this essay to the judge on the rule of law, underscoring the importance of jury service. He says, I think that would be fair under the circumstances because this is that important. I'm not picking on you, the judge went on to say. I'm sorry that you got a little bit of attention in this respect, but the attention is how serious we view this whole aspect of jury service. Hear, hear. The judge getting it just right, imposing upon her not a jail sentence, but requiring her to understand that you don't simply violate subpoenas, summonses, and jury service is hugely important. Before we go into our final story, final comments, we've got another caller on the phone. His name is Jake. You're calling in from Eureka, California. Jake, glad to have you with us.
Hey, James. So, yeah, doing reviews for plagiarism, they should have done that before Moscow Melania gave her speech that was actually Michelle Obama's
right.
speech.
Remember that story from many years ago? Yes, right.
And, you know, this trial in Georgia, I mean, we clearly have the evidence that Donald Trump is guilty. There is a phone conversation, a recorded conversation by the Secretary of State Raffensperger, a Republican, by the way, who recorded Donald Trump not only ordering him to, you know, produce votes out of thin air that would give Donald Trump a victory in the state of Georgia, but for an hour or more on that phone call, Trump was basically not only berating Raffensperger, he was personally threatening him with the Justice Department to, you know, send this guy to prison if he didn't commit election fraud on Donald Trump's behalf. Trump was clearly guilty. He has no defense. The evidence is right there for everyone to listen to. They need to charge him as soon as possible.
And Jake, I couldn't agree with you more. When we heard the tape itself, again, all of us still in our, not just our memory, our commonplace understanding, this is the putative, perhaps future defendant there in Georgia, actually attempting to undermine the election, right? As you just said, asking the Secretary of State to find additional votes, asking him to commit a crime to establish a greater number of votes than actually were cast. And so the reason, I suspect, why Fannie Willis has not seized on this yet, no doubt this is going to be, if she returns any indictment through the grand jury process, that will be the focus of it. But as you know, she's also looking at many things beyond that. Attempts to intimidate some poll workers, other efforts by others in the Trump ambit, if you will, who may have also visited in Atlanta, in Georgia, and trying to undermine the election there. And so she has plainly broadened her investigation beyond just that call. Nonetheless, Jake, I agree with you entirely. That's got to be the core of this. Again, why do we do it? Not only to stop this particular person, Donald Trump, perhaps others, but to send the message, the broad general deterrence message, you don't do this in America. And if you do this, if you do try to undermine our voting, our electoral process, you will be prosecuted, you'll be convicted. Note as well that that could also be a part of the Department of Justice's prosecution because they, too, are looking at all things related to 2020. Lisa Monaco, the Deputy Attorney General, has said that their investigation is broad.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page or Squarespace or Google My Business or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.